Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Glad you tuned in today. Happy Thursday. Hope you had a great, great Christmas holiday season. And something you probably already know that I've been thinking a lot about these days is, you know, the holiday season and Christmas especially can be like a great magnifier. Our joys are amplified, but our sorrows are as well. So I have a question for you. Have you ever found yourself facing disappointment during the holiday season? Maybe because life didn't turn out the way you thought it would, only to receive a Christmas blessing, some kind of provision from God, a blessing through a person that sort of came out of nowhere, and you probably would have missed it if you weren't in that place of loss and disappointment. Well, I want you to answer that question for me. I'm going to give you a chance to share your stories here in just a minute. I'd love to hear from you. My mentor once told me that expectation is premeditated disappointment, whereas expectancy is all about giving God time and space to move, knowing that one day He will. But when we have it settled in our mind, life was supposed to be this way, my kids were supposed to turn out this way, my marriage, my finances, whatever it is, we have an expectation and kind of a box that we want to put it in, and things don't go the way we expected, we can get really sunk in and into that mire and the muck of disappointment. But if we dare to look up, if we dare to try to put that expectation aside and lift our chin and embrace a sense of expectancy, that God cares, that He's with us, He's an ever-present help in times of trouble, we will find that He is moving on our behalf. Well, as I said, my friend Kathy Macias joins me today. She's written a novel that, I didn't want to put down. This is about an upper-middle-class woman who finds herself homeless with her two children after her husband dies because he kept their desperate financial situation kind of a secret. And so once he died, they were left destitute. And she's dealing with disappointment, grief, anger. But in that place, she starts to see God's provision. And I can't wait for you to hear about the story. And I want to give you a chance to share about ways God has shown up to you, for you, in your situation. But let me tell you about our guest, and I'll get her on the show. Excuse my voice. I'm still battling a little bit of a cold here. Kathy Macias is an award-winning author of 35 books, including her Freedom series and her Extreme Devotion series. She's a popular speaker for women's retreats, conferences, and churches. She loves prison outreach and homeless ministries, as well as praying for and ministering to the persecuted church globally. She and her husband, Al, live in Southern California, and you can learn more about her on the web at kathymacias.com. Kathy, it is about time we got you on this show.
It sure is. We overdue, aren't we?
We sure are. And I'm so glad to talk with you about this novel because it just grabbed my heart from the beginning. And we're going to unpack it in a moment. But we like to start out all of our conversations talking scripture. And you chose one that doesn't surprise me because as long as I've known you, this is marks, I think, who you are. Matthew 25, verse 40. The king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did for me." Talk to us about that passage.
That's one of my favorites. I mean, I know when I open the Bible, almost everything that pops out at me is, I say, oh, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
but this one really is. You know, I've just always had this heart for, I don't know if you want to say the underdog, but the least of these anyway, my heart just goes out. And I look at the life of Jesus, and the scriptures say over and over, he was moved with compassion. He didn't just look at somebody and feel sorry for them or
right.
feel bad with them. He did something about it. And that's what I believe is my call. Well, it's the call of all of us in the church, but I especially sense that in my writing and speaking. That's almost always the focus of what I talk about, what I want to communicate, is that Jesus has called us to walk in those same steps, to reach out to those in need, to make a difference in their lives.
You know, it's so true, Kathy, that we can miss those people who are in those destitute places, and then overnight we can find ourselves to be one of those people, can't we?
We sure can. And, of course, this book obviously points that out. And we've all experienced it to one degree or another. You know, someone in my own family is the one who challenged me to consider writing a book about the homeless. You know, he said, put a face on him. Let us see this in the church. And the reason he did that was because he found himself experiencing it. He never thought he would. And it was just one of those situations that he was thrown into it. And it wasn't a permanent situation, thankfully, but he said, oh, boy, did it open my eyes. And it was something that I had always said, you know, gee, we need to help people in that situation. And all of a sudden, there I was, hoping for a sandwich and a blanket. So It can happen to any of us at any point in time.
Hmm. And so you wrapped it around a Christmas story. Did you do that because the holiday season seems to be kind of a great amplifier? What moved you to do it that way?
That was absolutely the reason. When I decided to do a novel based on the homeless population and kind of, as my brother encouraged me to do, put a face.
Okay. She's. We'll get her back here in just a minute. Are you there? All right. Talking to Kathy Macias today, we seem to have encountered a technical difficulty, and so we're going to get her back. I'm going to open up the phone lines while we wait, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. This story is about this woman who lived upper-middle-class life, loved her husband, had two little kids, and then her husband dies, and she is left destitute. She is forced to move out of her home, and she enters the homeless population, and she's protecting these two little kids, and she's going, sleeping behind the cleaners, hoping for a sandwich and a blanket and, you know, getting her few little coins to stretch out as far as she can, wondering if she can hang out in the library so her kids can keep reading. But now that she's homeless, they would see her that way and maybe kick her out. I mean, the story is unbelievable, and it sounds even depressing, but it really isn't, because you're reading going, oh, my goodness, this could happen to anybody. But you start to see God's heart in it all and his provision in it all, and it looks like we might be getting her back on. But we do have two copies to give away if you need a good book to snuggle up with. To me, this awakened my heart once again to the, not only the plight of the homeless, but God's heart for the poor, God's heart for the hurting, and God's heart for you and me. I mean, there's things that we all carry around in our hearts, and he's just an ever-present help in trouble. I think we got her back. Kathy, are you there?
I'm here. Don't know who got in the way here and cut us off, but here we are.
There we are. That's good. So I kind of gave a setup a little bit of the story, and so maybe do that for me if you would. Maybe probably in your words would be a little bit better, but I talked about Josie, the wife whose husband died, leaving them destitute, and here they find themselves homeless. Maybe you can take it from there.
Well, Josie had what you would call pretty much an average middle-class life. She was comfortable. She didn't herself have a career and wasn't working. She was a stay-at-home mom at the time and with two young children. And she had recently lost her mother, and for that reason and other issues that were going on, her husband was trying to shield her. He wasn't necessarily being sneaky, but he just didn't want her to know how bad things were, and he was so hoping he would find something, another job or whatever, and get caught up and get things back in order. So that was the main reason that she was unaware of what was going on, and then he became seriously ill, and he died, and you know, she was left finding out that he had cashed in the insurance policy, maxed out the credit cards, taken out a second on the house, and she had no income. I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that, you know. And, of course, her faith had been shaky as it was. She was raised by her by a Christian mother, and she knew, but it wasn't a real tight personal thing with her. It was sort of, well, everything's wonderful, and I'm blessed and all this, but suddenly she's thrown into the trenches where really, I believe, that's where we really, really grapple with the truth of our faith and lay hold of it and make it personal and walk it out. And it becomes so real to us then. And that's where, as you said, she begins to kind of, okay, now who am I and what do I really believe and why is God doing this to me? And so that's the situation she finds herself in with two very young children, one not even in school yet. And knowing nothing about learning the ropes of living on the streets, like many who have been there for years know, okay, here's where you go to get lunch on Tuesday, and here's where you can probably get a place to sleep on Friday. She didn't know any of those things, so she was really having to learn all of that, just the survival techniques, let alone even beginning to think about getting back on her feet and into a home.
And what's interesting, I like that you wove this into the storyline, is some people did come by and offer her help. And she accepted it to a degree, but she didn't want to become dependent on them. She didn't want her kids to settle into somebody else's home. And something rose up in her. I don't know, for me, when I've been in those seasons of great, great need, I feel like I'm now a better giver because I had to be on that humbling side of receiving. Maybe say a word about that, that there are times where God does provide through other people. And somehow, some way, we've got to humble ourselves to receive.
You know, that's true, and that is difficult. I personally believe it's much easier to be the giver. I'm a doer. I'm a fixer. I see somebody with a problem. I run off. I have to stop and remind myself to pray first most of the time because I just want to fix the problem that I see in front of me. And there's only been a few times in my life when I've had to be on the other end of it, and really, when it comes to the receiving, I find it much more difficult because you have to suddenly humble yourself and say, okay, I have no means of meeting this need right now, and here's God providing a way right in front of my face, and there's a part of me that says, no, I want to fix this myself. I want to take care of this myself. And I think that's part of what Josie is wrestling with and grappling with in this book. She appreciates the stretched out hand and the offer of help, but at the same time, she obviously knows it can't be a permanent situation. But her children are just so grateful to have, you know, a bed to sleep in and dinner at night and to be warm. And she sees that and wants to, you know, kind of give into that and let them settle in as long as possible. But there's that other part of her that says, no, I got to get out there and find something on my own. It's just an ongoing wrestling with things that homeless people told me they personally deal with until or unless they come to a place where they give up entirely and just say, you know, nothing's ever going to get better. And then you don't wrestle with that anymore. So Josie hadn't come to that point yet.
You know, it was interesting watching these different people in the story reach out, these different believers reach out and help. And they had such a humble heart with the way that they did that. But so many of us in the church can really miss the homeless in our midst. What are ways you think that the church can maybe be more the hands and feet of Christ to these who are just, you know, I think it's easy to, you know, I wrote this in one of my books, that we can't assume every homeless person is a drunk who wants to be homeless. Lots of people have run into hard, hard situations who need help and need a hand. And so how can we be awakened to the needs around us and be the hands and feet of Christ?
Well, you know, first, I think it is what you said. We need to understand the makeup of the homeless population. Yes, there are the stereotypical drunks or drug users who have just let that take over their lives, and obviously, at that point, there's no longer any place for them to go live, but just out on the streets because every dime goes to feed the habit. And at the same time, that doesn't mean we give up on them and don't help, but that is a large portion. And then we do have people with mental illness and who may or may not be able to get any help. So we have those. But you know what I found as I researched it, and I knew part of it because I have done some homeless ministry, but I was a little bit amazed at the percentages when I found out that nearly 20% of the homeless are made up of families with young children, whether single parents or, you know, both parents, for whatever reason, are on the street. That just broke my heart. To think of anyone homeless is very upsetting, but to think of a child not knowing where they're going to lay their head that night or whether or not they're going to go to sleep hungry, that really tore my heart out to think of that. That's what started the kernel of the story. I had to build it around that. And then, of course, I also found that there was a substantial portion of veterans, especially the Vietnam era. And I thought, oh, how sad to think that those who stood tall and proud at one time and fought for our country and our way of life and defended us are now standing in a soup line, hunched over and hoping for a meal. And so that's where the story began to swirl and come together. The other thing I think that's important, if we really want in the church to be effective in helping, not just meeting that immediate need, although there's nothing wrong with giving a bowl of soup or a sandwich or a blanket, obviously those are appreciated and needed, but that is not a long-term situation. What I found is the greatest need, and I would love to see churches come together to make this happen, a place for the homeless to come who are serious about wanting to get off the streets, a place where they can fill out a job resume and have a contact phone number and address somewhere. Because if you put in a job application, people want to know, how do we get a hold of you? Mm-hmm. Well, I sleep behind the cleaners down there on First Street. You know, they need something substantial in that way. They need a place to shower and put on clean clothes to go for an interview. All of these things are vital and crucial. If they're going to have any chance at all at competing in a very tough job market and getting a job and getting on their feet and back into a home again.
Isn't that kind of what the Barnett Dream Centers are about, where they're feeding the homeless, they're training them, they're being a safe haven for traffic victims, they're teaching them trades. Isn't that kind of what they do?
Absolutely. Yeah. That is such a great model, and I really hope to see that multiplied across the country.
Yeah, I think more and more people are catching the vision. But you're right, giving a blanket and a sandwich is important, but really taking it to a next step to help them get on their feet is a whole different scenario. Boy, that's amazing. Well, how about you? I want to ask you, have you found God in an unexpected place? Have you faced a disappointment, and all you could see was a disappointment. But then God shone through, and he lifted your chin. I want to hear from you. We've got a couple copies of Kathy's book to give away. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. So you've got a story, Kathy, to tell about the cover. I love the cover of this book, by the way. But tell us the unexpected blessing that even came out of the cover of this book.
Oh, this is just amazing to me. I love, as you said, I love the book. I love the story that's in the book. But as I started writing it, I had no idea where God was going with this. And, you know, his ways are so far above ours, mm-hmm. and it just never ceases to amaze me. We think we know what we're doing, what God's called us to do, and if we're walking in obedience to him, we are. But we don't begin to understand the scope of his purpose and plan. And when this book was completed and turned into the publisher, they, of course, had to begin the editing process and developing a cover and doing all those things. And so they brought in a photographer who was in, you know, assigned finding the picture that would go on the front of the cover. And he and his wife were walking around Asheville, North Carolina, about a year ago, right around Christmas time last year, and he had read the manuscript. And so he knew what the book was about. He knew about the homeless Vietnam vet named Rick in the book itself, who actually takes Josie and her two children under his wing and helps them. And so he really felt like that would, especially with the title being Unexpected Christmas Hero, we needed to represent this man, Rick, on the cover. And so he and his wife were looking for someone that might be appropriate and had almost given up when they came across a man named Willard Parker. The photographer took one look at Mr. Parker and said, "Wow, that's Rick in the book." I mean, mm-hmm. it was just remarkable how much he resembled him. The age, he had the beard, he had the clothing he was wearing. Everything was just as I described Rick in the book. And so he approached Mr. Parker, told him what they were doing and what the book was about, and asked if he would be willing to pose. And, of course, he had to sign the release and do all this sort of thing, and he did. And then he mentioned that he himself was actually homeless and hadn't seen his family in many years, and he has leukemia, isn't well, and his, you know, the desire of his heart was that he would see his family again while there was time. And so, you know, having his picture on the front of the book, he wondered if maybe that might not help him find his family, and it was just sort of left at that. But then the photographer felt that he wanted to share the story with me once the cover was in place, and I had said how much I liked it. I really, really loved the cover, as you said. And so I commented on that, and so the photographer wrote back and told me the story behind it, and I thought to myself, my goodness, this has just got God's fingerprints all over it. I cannot just let this go and not follow up. So that's when we began the campaign, posting the picture, the cover, all over the internet, saying, "Do you know this man's family? Where are they?" And it took us less than a month, and I got an email one day with the subject line said, "I'm Willard Parker's daughter."
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's just, wow. And yeah. So what'd you do?
Well, she sent me her phone number. That's all she said. "I'm Willard Parker's daughter. Here's my phone number." So I called her, not knowing what to expect, because there were people who cautioned me and said, you know, his family may not want to see him again. We don't know what the past story is. We know nothing of that. And I knew that was a possibility, but I felt like we needed to pursue it anyway. So I called her, and she was so receptive. In fact, she was thrilled. She said a friend of hers had spotted the picture and thought to herself, "Now, I haven't seen Amber's dad in years, but boy, does that look like him." So she sent a note to Amber and said, "Go to this website, check out this book cover, and tell me what you think." And so she did, and that's what she said. She looked at it, and she started crying. She said, "That's my daddy." Mm. Oh, so, of course, when she told me that, I was crying, too. And you know, we were just having a sob fest going on. But she said she'd wanted so much to find him. But, you know, when you're homeless and you don't have a cell phone or a permanent place to live, it's pretty tough for people to track you down.
Yeah.
And so this was really, to me, what a Christmas miracle that this reunited them. And we are now, in fact, working on reuniting the entire family. That should be taking place right after the first of the year. And he's going to meet his grandchildren. He's never seen them. And I can't believe how exciting that is.
That is so wonderful. And I love that you just took the initiative and you were a catalyst to a miracle. That's amazing. Wow. So my question to you today, unless you've got a question for my guest, is, has God met you with an unexpected blessing this holiday season? And especially, has it happened amidst disappointment where things didn't turn out the way you thought? But maybe not. Maybe he just surprised you with a blessing. I would love to know. 877-933-2484. We've got Sherry calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Sherry, welcome.
Thank you.
Hey.
My mother, Darlene, just unexpectedly died on December 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really missing her. This has been a hard holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been asking God to help me to, you know, help me through this grief and help me just help me to feel whatever feelings I need to feel. And I've been surprisingly able to have my children and grandchildren come over and spend time together, and we enjoyed each other's company. And
that's so tough, though, Sherry. I know that feeling well. I'm wondering, Kathy, if you have a word of encouragement for Sherry amidst her grief. I know you're no stranger to suffering either.
No. In fact, last Christmas I was experiencing this very same thing. My mother had recently passed away after living with us for 12 years, and everywhere I walked in the house, it just echoed her absence. You know, there were times, just like Sherry, that I was praying, God, just, you know, carry me, because I can't even walk. I felt crushed with grief. And I don't know how else to explain this. Sometimes I felt like I couldn't breathe. You know what's coming? I mean, she was 90 years old. I knew she went to be with the Lord, and it's what she wanted. I rejoiced for her in that, but the pain was so great. And so I just want to encourage you, Sherry, that, you know, God is faithful. You're praying exactly the way you need to when you ask him to help you through it, to carry you through this, because this year is the second year without her, and of course I still miss her. I put up the tree and think about, you know, how much she loved Christmas and how much the kids and grandkids love to come and see her. But I don't feel that crushing grief anymore. It is still hard, but not like it was last year. And God is faithful to carry us through. It's not that time heals, it's that God does.
That's right. And Sherry, just give yourself permission to feel bad and feel sad. And I think it just comes in waves, but then grace comes too and lifts us back up again. So you'll get a copy of the book, and I think it'll really encourage you. So maybe you have a Christmas blessing, an unexpected way that God broke through for you. I would love to know. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Talk about some of the ways the church did step in for Josie, tangible ways, because I think we can really just even learn something by the example of some of these characters.
Well, at times, members of the church even just took them into their home and gave them a safe, warm, a dry place to live and regular meals and kind of carried them through, because Josie did get a small check every month, you know, at the beginning of the month, but it just wouldn't last till the end. And so that's when she'd come to the place where, okay, I can't even afford a room for the children. I don't have anywhere safe to take them. I don't want to sleep with them on the street. And someone somehow would step in at the right time with an offer to let them come and stay with them for a while, or rides to and from church, or warm jackets, or just the lady at the library who recognized them as coming in on a regular basis during the day. And she knew in her heart they were homeless, but she didn't run them off. She gave them a safe place to spend the day and to you know, just be safe and warm and dry and out of the elements. Just little things like that that we don't even stop and think about are really great gifts of grace and mercy in the middle of those situations.
You know, we do tend to think about this stuff a lot during the holidays because it's such an amplifier, but really to be thinking about it all year long, maybe just give some advice for each of us who want so much to keep the needs of the poor before us. What are some tangible ways we can do that so that this isn't just a seasonal thing?
You know, I have a picture of a homeless couple that I met in a nearby town about 2 years ago. I have a picture of them on my refrigerator, and I pray for them every time I pass by. I met them, I prayed for them, and the first time I prayed for them and put my hands on their shoulders to pray, the woman began to cry, and she said, I appreciate your prayers, but it means so much that you're willing to touch us. Most people don't want to do that. And I think it's a thing for us to remember those needs that these people have all the time of being respected. You know, their human dignity needs to be preserved in the midst of all of this. So something as simple as a picture, whether it's someone you actually know or just someone that will represent as a reminder to pray for these people and to ask God for opportunities to minister however he directs.
That's really good. Really, really good. And even let that be an example of, I mean, I think our churches are filled with people who look like they're probably middle class, doing fine, and are dying on the vine behind the scenes financially, relationally, emotionally. And but to let that be a symbol of, Lord, open my eyes to the needs around me because they're everywhere. And I'm talking to Kathy Macias today about her novel, Unexpected Christmas Hero. We've got one more copy to give away and love to hear from you how God unexpectedly broke through this year. Did he do that in any special way? I'd love to know. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I'll catch Barbara's call in just a moment. More with Kathy Macias in just a moment.
In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. The earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone, snow.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Kathy Macias about her book, Unexpected Christmas Hero. It's a novel that I loved and read cover to cover. And so my question for you today is, we're just talking about how God meets us in the midst of our disappointments, and he really does often use those places to bring divine appointments. Has God broken through in your life in an unexpected way and blessed you, even amidst disappointment? Love to know. 877-933-2484. I've got Barbara calling from Stillwater. Barbara, welcome.
You.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm really well and have a great unexpected joy this Christmas. Our family was completely broken apart 8 years ago, and our adult children rejected us and each other. And since October, we've been in contact a little bit. And this Christmas, we were with or talked to all of them, and they were beautiful exchanges of glad that you're back in our lives.
Mm.
And it was even initiated by the children. So we just are so praiseworthy of our Lord and grateful to people who have been praying for us. And, you know, there was times we just prayed that it would have a turnaround in our lifetime. And it did. And it's just been a wonderful thing. So.
Barbara.
God does hear and care about us.
You know, your story is such an example, Barbara, of that we're never to give up hope, never to stop praying. And I think it represents many listening today who are heartbroken over some broken relationships. So would that be one of the pieces of advice you'd offer, is never give up hope, never stop praying? Anything else you'd add to that?
You know, that's the very thing that jumped out at me as she was talking. She said something about 8 years, you know, 8 years ago, the way things were happening. And I think that is exactly what we need to hang on to. Sometimes we think, I just can't get through today. It's just horrible. You know, the pain is just too crushing and too deep. But if we let God carry us one step at a time, it takes time. We keep praying. We keep believing. We keep walking forward. And in God's perfect timing, he brings about his purpose. And that's wonderful to hear. I love that story, hearing from her.
Wow, we celebrate with you, Barbara. Thank you so much for that. Well, Kathy, we do all have that tendency to believe everybody else is doing better. They have more money. They have the happier marriage. You know, why do we do that? Because
you know,
we all have
so
a story behind the four walls, right?
Yes, we do. It's so absolutely true. And I think a lot of it has to do with when we're out and about, whether it's at church or in the mall or wherever we are, you know, we're putting on our best face. And we obviously don't want to go around crying everywhere we go or wearing a sign, you know, woe is me or something. But I think we have this tendency, when we're hurting especially, we become self-absorbed, understandably so. We all do it. But we're looking at everyone else and going, well, they're smiling and they're with family and everything's great. And we have no idea that underneath they may be crying out in pain as much or more than we are. And I think that's why it's so important when we are hurting like this, all the time, of course, but especially then when we feel like, you know, the world has just caved in on us, that we need to be hanging on to God and be God-focused instead of self-focused, because we will never get past the pain of today if we're focused on ourselves. You know, my little grandma, she was 4'8" on a good day, as she said. But she used to say, people who are wrapped up in themselves make small packages.
Kathy, my grandma used to say that too.
Is that right? Well, there, I guess our grandmas were very wise women.
That's
and
right.
It's so true because, you know, when we begin to let God unwrap the package that he has inside, it is so much bigger and greater than anything we could have imagined. Mm-hmm. But we need to hang on to that and remember, God focus, God focus. It's just too easy to be pain focused on ourselves, but stay focused on God, and through the pain, he brings you into that greater place of freedom.
Don't you think that enemy baits us into that sin of comparison because it throws salt in our wounds? You know, if we are believing a lie about everybody else's blessings, and then it contrasts with the curse that we're dealing with or the heartbreak, it makes it that much worse, don't you think?
I absolutely do. And you know, it's just so easy to get caught up in that because, gee, everybody else has it made, and I'm the only one here that's going through all this stuff. And I think that's another reason why it's so important to be God-focused and to be mm-hmm. involved with other believers. And to, you know, for me, I just have to take 1 minute and begin to reflect on some of the ministries God has allowed me to be involved in with, for instance, the persecuted church. And I think of people who are just so thrilled. There's a village in China that was so excited. All the Christians in that village were thrilled because they got a page of the Bible. They had a page someone delivered to them, and that was, you know, what they focused on. They preached sermons on it. They read it. They meditated on it. They memorized it. They prayed over it, and they were thrilled. And I'm thinking to myself, these are people who have so much less than I, and here I am thinking I'm having a hard time. And I may be in relation to someone else, but in relation to the majority of people in the world, I am just so blessed, so abundantly full of good things that it just puts it all back in perspective for me.
It sure does. I remember hearing a pastor once say, he said, I'm always 10 minutes away from depression, as far as where he could go in his mind. And I think that's a good picture for us to remember, that where the thoughts go, there goes our perspective. And I know I need to remember that. But I my mom always said this, too, that if everybody put their troubles on the table, you know, we do that whole sin of comparison thing. But if we were to all put our stuff on the table, we would end up taking back our troubles more than
yes.
Because we have the grace to carry those, even if it doesn't feel like it. I think that's great.
That's so true. And, you know, you and I are picture people. We're always picturing these things in our mind, like mm-hmm. you just mentioned. And that brought one of my favorites to mind, too, that I always remember this mountain, facing this mountain. I can't even remember what pastor said this or gave this picture to me, but I love it. And you see yourself on one side of this mountain, and you've got a teaspoon, and you're chipping away at it, trying to dig a hole, dig your way through this mountain. And each spoonful, you're ready to give up. What you don't see is on the other side, there's God with this huge earth mover. You know, he's just coming along. And any minute now, the whole thing is just going to be scooped up by him and moved away, and you're going to see God. You know, but all we're focused on is this little teaspoon. This is all I can do. I can just chip away with this little teaspoon. I'm never going to make it. And you're absolutely right. In our own strength, with our little teaspoon, we're not. But God's on the other side of that mountain with an earth mover coming our way. So.
That is so good. And again, Barbara's story is such an example of that.
Yes.
That she was scooping with her spoon, doing her praying and not giving up hope. And the Bible does say hope doesn't disappoint. As I'm listening to you talk, I'm thinking about this is probably what the big heartbreak is mostly in holidays, is relational breakdown or relational loss, because it's the time where we get together with people that we love. And so maybe you can offer a word of encouragement for someone who's just grieving either a broken relationship or a lost relationship. How can they find joy and peace amidst the reality that I've not seen this mountain move yet, and it's killing me?
And you're right. I think, you know, it's not that we don't feel that same pain all year long, but the holidays, you know, Christmas, we just picture these perfect scenarios of people walking arm in arm through this beautiful, pristine, snow-covered landscape. They're all heading home to grandma's or something for dinner when the fireplace is burning, the tree is lit, and there's a big feast on the table. But whether you're homeless or whether you're just actually severed or have fractured relationships that are breaking your heart, when those are the things that are magnified, then all of a sudden, okay, I don't fit that, you know, Courier and Ives picture anymore. I don't have that place to go to grandma's with the fire burning and the tree lit and the food on the table, and so-and-so's not even speaking to me anymore. You know, someone actually wrote to me just about a week ago and said that she had gone through 9 Christmases without hearing, this is so much like Barbara's story, without hearing from her grown son. He had gone off on his own. He had been involved in drugs and all sorts of legal problems. And she actually, for the sake of the rest of her family, had to tell him he could no longer
come to their home to live. If he ever came, she would feed him, but that was it. You know, she couldn't, for the sake of her own or other children, the rest of her family, allow him with the problems that he had into the home to live there anymore. And he was furious. He said he never wanted to see her again. 9 Christmases she went through with that, and she continued to pray, and every year she would look on the blessings of her other children and all of her family and be grateful, but there was that hole in her heart, you know, that place of her firstborn son, and he was gone, and she didn't know if he was dead or alive, but she kept praying, and 1 week ago, he showed up on her doorstep, and, you know, his life had turned around. He actually was gainfully employed. He had even married. He had one child, a little 2-year-old, and he brought the family with him in hopes that mom and dad would let him back in the house and let him see his family, and of course they welcomed him with open arms. But it had taken him that long to get past the anger in his own heart so that he could come back and humbly ask for forgiveness and offer it and the relationships could be mended. Now, I know that's like a perfect case scenario, and it doesn't always work that way, but it is a word of encouragement to all of us who are, you know, we have that hole in our heart for maybe that one missing relationship or one real deep regret that we think is never going to be mended or healed. God is working behind the scenes. He is behind that mountain, so don't quit scooping with your teaspoon.
Such a good word of encouragement. Well, let's get back to this story again. So the unexpected Christmas hero is a homeless man. Without having you give away too much of the story, explain Rick's role and what makes him a hero. I mean, again, I don't feel like you need to give away the story, but as much as you can.
Well, Rick is a Vietnam vet who has some health issues, including some mild mental health issues. Nothing that he's dangerous or can't function, but just enough that he has not been able to ever really recover from some of the situations he experienced earlier in life. And so he's been on the streets for quite some time. And, you know, he's pretty much seen everything there is to see out there. He knows the ropes. He knows how to handle things. But in the process of being out there on the streets, he has actually come to know Christ and develop a very deep relationship with him, which is what's sustaining him at that point in his life. He will walk, you know, a few miles through bad weather just to get to church to worship with other people. But he always stays in the back row, kind of, you know, wanting to be invisible, not really feeling like he should integrate with the rest of the congregation. But a few of them who are involved in homeless ministry have come to know him and befriended him. But this man, Rick, actually runs into Josie and her 2 young children while they're all having a Thanksgiving dinner, because that's pretty much where the story opens, is right at the Thanksgiving holiday and carries through to Christmas. And he recognizes that they're new on the streets. They don't know what they're doing. And so his heart reaches out to them, and he begins to just pray for them and finds himself turning up in their lives more often than he could have initiated on his own. So he realizes God is orchestrating a lot of these divine appointments, and he's meeting them and helping them every way he can and teaching them how to stay safe and places they can go. But most of all, he's praying and intervening and looking for a way to help them in a more substantial way. And, of course, that part I won't go into, but he does provide a Christmas miracle for them. God uses him in a really miraculous way to help Josie and her children.
Wow. Well, you know, this is one of those novels I love. You know, I'm a nonfiction writer, but I love, love, love fiction. And this is one of those novels, Kathy, that I wanted to hear more. I want you to write another book because I'm not done with those characters yet. And that's how you know it's a good book, where it's like, I'm not done with Josie. I'm not done with her kids and her friends. And do you ever think you might want to write a sequel?
You know, I never had really thought about it because my Christmas books are usually standalone, but so many people have said this and said, wow, especially now that you've got this story behind the story about Mr. Parker and the reunion of his family, there has to be a follow-up to all of this. And so I have been praying and saying, okay, Lord, I'm open. You open the doors, I'll walk through them.
So. That's so good. Well, just, you know, we were talking about this before we dug into the story of Rick. But the person who's dealing with relational disappointment, you know, it can be so all-consuming that it really dampens and darkens all your other relationships. So maybe offer a word of encouragement to someone that, yep, this hole is in your heart. You're going to bring it before the Lord. You're not going to give up hope. But then how do they walk in joy, embrace peace? You know what I mean? How do they steward that pain and heartache in a way that doesn't consume the rest of their lives?
You know, I think that is probably something that is so probably much more common than we would ever realize.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, of my little German grandmother. She was orphaned at the age of 10,
and went to live with a German pastor, a Lutheran pastor, and his wife, and worked on their farm. And, you know, her heart was broken, and she thought her life was over. And yet, that is where she was exposed to the gospel for the first time. And she always talked about, after that, about having Jesus in her heart, you know, when she would talk to us about that. She actually was the only one who prayed for all of us. We were not, you know, my parents were not believers, but she prayed for all of us. My dad, who was her oldest son, and wanted no part of it. But she clung to the belief that she had very little teaching, but what she had, she believed that if she just kept praying for her family, that they would come around. Now, during World War II, she was still in Germany. My dad had come to this country, and he ended up being in the army here. And her two sons there, her older son that was still left, the middle son, Werner, was conscripted into the Nazi army, and that's another story. He went AWOL, and my dad was able to help rescue him. Mm. But the youngest one, Edward, her youngest son, she hid from the Nazis because she said, I cannot bear to lose one more son. She didn't hear anything from my dad during the war because he was over here and couldn't communicate with her. Her son, Werner, my uncle, had escaped and was hiding out. She didn't know where he was, if he was dead or alive. And Edward was her only son left, and she thought, I'm not going to let the Nazis take him into their army. But when he turned 16, even though she did her best to hide him, they came and took him away. Mm. And he was sent to the front, the Russian front, and the last she heard, he was captured by the Russians. And, of course, the German soldiers received the worst possible treatment at the Russians' hands. She never knew if he made it through. Of course, most everyone figured he did not. The Red Cross, after the war, looked for him, didn't find him. But this was her baby. Even though she was reunited with my dad and with her other son, Werner, my uncle, and eventually all of them came to this country, and they established family, and she was close to all of us, and she prayed us all into the kingdom, my dad, in his last week of 88 years of life. She was faithful in that. God used her in that. And yet I know that when she died at the age of 90, her one desire was to go and see her son, Edward, that she hadn't seen since he was taken at the age of 16. That hole remained in her heart for all those decades. They didn't go away. She didn't quit missing him. I'm sure it wasn't as crushing and painful as it was in the very beginning, but always there was that thought for her baby. And yet she had that hope that she would see him in heaven one day. And I believe they're together, you know, just as my dad is there with him now and many of the others. But she used those remaining decades to pray for all of us and to bring us into the kingdom. God used her effectively and powerfully in that. So that is, I believe, what kept her from being crushed by this hole in her heart for her baby.
That's just absolutely amazing. You know, you hear those jokes about first world problems where, you know, a friend posted on Facebook, first world issue this Christmas, my Wii broke down or something. He was just being, you know, kind of whatever.
But you
read about that. I read an article this past weekend. I don't remember the guy's name, and it wasn't a Christian article, but this guy was a big-time movie producer and produced some major films. And he had done a trip out, I want to, somewhere. Oh, I wish I could remember. But anyway, he was in a third-world country, and he was just reaching out and helping feed these families. And he saw this little girl on a garbage dump, and she was digging through the garbage, and his heart was just assaulted for her. I mean, he was just like, this is no way for this little girl to live. At that very moment, he got a call from one of his movie stars who was ranting because he'd gotten on the jet and all of his fun treats weren't there. And the movie star says to this guy, why does my life have to be so difficult? And it was like, at that moment, he's like, I am done with this. So he took all of his money and he puts it into this mission. I didn't get any sense that there was faith in him. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? But the idea that he was like, let me tell you what some real problems are. And I want you just to say a word about that because, you know, there is real heartbreak with relational breakdown and that kind of a thing. But there are times where our disappointments, God cares about every detail. But as you said, we have to get some perspective because 98% of the rest of the world really does know disappointment a way that we cannot know living here.
You know, that's so true. And I think possibly the easiest way for me to express it is from our Beyond Me Ministries viewpoint. That I wrote a book some years ago, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Susie, Beyond Me.
Mm-hmm.
And the it's a nonfiction book. And the subtitle is Living a You First Life in a Me First World. And that has become our flagship book. It has become, you know, we have a Beyond Me Ministry team that prays not just for me as I write or I go out and speak and minister, but that all of us involved will continually look beyond self out
beyond us into our own little issues of life and begin to see what other people are dealing with. And I think that's why I am so driven to be involved in ministries like the persecuted church or rescuing people in human trafficking or the homeless, issues where people have serious life and death issues every day, where people get up in the morning and I just can't even imagine being a mother in any other country or homeless here, waking up in the morning and saying, am I going to be able to feed my children today? Am I going to be able to keep them safe? Those are issues that to me are just monumental. And I love all my 17 grandchildren and my 4 great grands, but when I hear one of them whining because they couldn't get the right color nail polish, I just want to ram my head on the wall. It's like, okay, I've missed something here. We need to have a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I will sit down with them, and rather than castigating them for such a ridiculous, what they consider problem, I begin to share with them about someone like one of my heroes, Li Ying, a Chinese woman who served a 15-year prison sentence away from her husband and child and all of her family for the crime of distributing Christian literature to children, mm-hmm. something that I do every day. I write Christian books. I pass them out. I do studies. I speak. These people, are, for so much less, are losing 15 years of their life but staying faithful to what they believe. And then I begin, and I always say, I'm always looking for stories of children in these situations that I share with my grandchildren. And I say, I want you to promise me one thing. I don't care if you ever give me a gift. I don't care what you do. Take this child on as your own. This little girl that lives over here has this issue she's dealing with. Will you promise me that you will pray for her every day? And I'll tell you what, it makes a difference. They come back to me later and go, oh, Grandma, I don't care about my nail polish anymore. Mm. I want to help so-and-so, you know. And it does change us. And if it works with our grandchildren, it works with us.
Yeah.
We need to take on a prayer project of someone with serious life and death issues, and that will keep our issues in perspective.
Boy, that is so good, because, you know, it never does work to conk people on the head with compassion. You know what I mean? To say, eat your vegetables,
right.
There's people starving and whatever. But
yeah.
Really to say, let me offer some perspective here. And, boy, that is a very, very powerful way to do it. Well, say a little bit more, Kathy, about the persecuted church. And last I read, it was a number of years ago, but one every 3 minutes, one brother or sister in Christ every 3 minutes is either tortured or martyred for their faith. Would that be accurate still?
That is pretty close to what I've heard, too. Yes,
mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything otherwise or updated, but that is so true. And, you know, when we think of that and the gratitude and this is why I'm so supportive of ministries like Voices of the Martyrs and Open Doors and so many others that, you know, China Aid, all of these ministries that do support not only those who have been persecuted themselves, tortured, even martyred, but the families of those. You know, if the father in a family is taken away, suddenly there's a woman and children who have no way of supporting themselves. And so we have ministries that come alongside and help them in the interim, because the person who's locked up and being tortured and going through all of this for their faith, it helps them tremendously to know that someone else is caring for their family. And so my heart is just, you know, always reaching out to the persecuted church, to human trafficking victims. These are some of my real passions, ministry passions. And I can't encourage people enough. This is why I write novels about them, because I want them to see the persecuted church and the human trafficking victims and all of these, and the homeless, all of them with faces on, so that even if they take on one, see, this is the thing. We look at this monumental problem of the persecuted church or human trafficking, and we hear of millions of people in these situations, and we are so overwhelmed that we feel paralyzed to do anything. I can't solve that problem. No, you can't. But each of us can do one thing. And if we will seek God and ask Him what that one thing is, He will be faithful to show it to us. And if everyone in the church took on that one thing, we would be so effective in our ministry and relieving the pain and suffering of others. We would be the body of Christ as He has called us to be. And that's my word of encouragement to each one. I don't care what situation you're in right now. You can do one thing, whether it's praying, giving, doing, whatever it may be. Just ask God, and He will be faithful to tell you.
And won't you say that that's where you're going to find some of your greatest fulfillment? Not that we give to get, but this is so God's heart. I know for me, as we've stepped into some of these areas of ministry, there has been a power like nothing we've ever experienced before, because it's almost like we stepped into this flowing, raging river of God's heart for these people. And suddenly we're in agreement with Him in such a way that we're experiencing His favor, His pleasure, His empowerment. But it is getting out of that me first mindset, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, Jesus said it for a reason. It is more blessed to give than to receive. The blessing we get in giving is just overwhelming. You know, with and I believe even non-Christians experience this, like this man you talked about earlier who just saw this and knew, you know, I need to go and give where it's really needed. God has called us. We are made in His image. His image is stamped on us. And God is a giver. He so loved the world that He gave. He gave everything. And that's what He's called us to do. When we become you-focused instead of me-focused, and then, of course, that only begins with a God focus. But when we do that and we begin to just become givers without worrying about what we get in return, we will get more back than we ever imagined. The blessings will flow, and that fulfillment will come and just flow out of our hearts with so much joy because we will be fulfilling the very purpose for which our Creator made us.
Mm. And then you become a world changer. And so that might be just a charge as you walk into 2013, Lord, I want to be a world changer. Show me what area, you know, what cause that I can sow into in my prayers and in my gifts. Then you become a world changer. Kathy, if people want more information on some of these novels that you've been referring to, where can they find them?
Well, they can go to my website. That's probably the easiest. I mean, they're in stores, they're in all the online venues. But if they want to go to my website, which is Kathy, K-A-T-H-I, Macias, M-A-C-I-A-S.com, or boldfiction.com will take them there also. They can see the little videos that go with each book. They can order them. They can find out where I'm going to be speaking. They can send me an email, and I will answer them. And they can sign up for my weekly devotional that goes out in English and Spanish every week. I would love to hear from them.
Mm, beautiful. Well, as we get ready to wrap up, I'm just thinking of that person who's feeling nothing but loss and heartache and disappointment this season and needs a gift of perspective and encouragement. Would you pray for that person?
Absolutely. Father God, first of all, I thank you for the privilege that together we can come into your presence and that because of Jesus, because of your Son and the work he did for us on the cross, and that he not only came as a baby to be born at Christmas, but that he died on the cross and rose again, and that he intercedes for us now, Lord. So in his name, I come and I pray and know that you hear me as I pray for that one whose heart is broken right now. Your word says that you are near to the brokenhearted, and I ask you for that one especially to just lift them in your nail-scarred hands and hold them close to your heart and whisper words of encouragement and healing, Lord, and let them know of your unconditional love and your promises that never fail. And in that wonderful knowledge, Lord, that confidence that you say what you mean and you mean what you say, I thank you that you have heard us and that you will do it in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Kathy, thank you for your time. You're just a great guest, and I appreciate your heart so much. Bless you, honey.
Thank you, Susie.
Good to be with you. The title of her novel, again, is Unexpected Christmas Hero.
In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. The earth stood hard as iron, water like a stone. Snow had fallen, snow on snow, snow on snow.
Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this interview up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Well, finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. And He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.